This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
Welcoming you to episode number 123, Virtual Star Wars. Hello and welcome to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin along with Michael Rowe.
Woohoo!
Woohoo indeed, because every aspect of that is going to be embedded in our show for the day.
Yes, and it will be 100% link-worthy.
And buzzword compliant.
Yes.
All right, well, let's get right to our virtual fun, shall we? So the first virtual thing that you shared with me a little earlier today was a scratch game where you tried to virtually land a rocket on a platform.
Well, not just any rocket. For those of you who've been watching the medias of the world lately, good old... oh, God. What's his name? Oh.
Elon Musk.
Thank you. Good old Elon Musk. I went totally blank. I saw him on The Late Show with Colbert recently, and it was actually really funny. Anyway, he's been trying to reduce the cost of spaceflight by creating reusable landers, right? We've given up on the space shuttle. The space shuttle had a lot of reusable components. It flew for 30 years, and right now, space travel has become unbelievably expensive because we throw away the rocket. We drop parts in the ocean. The rest goes up into space. Part of it ends up in space. Some of it comes down, but very little of a rocket is reused. And in order to really get to the point of commercial space travel at a financially viable level, the idea is to make reusable landers. And so the idea is to take the traditional rocket and
put legs on it,
put little feet on it, and do like you, if you remember the old science fiction books and movies, the rocket would come, butt first or tail first and land on the ground and launch in the same position. So he's been testing this, and each time he gets closer and, basically, they have a, I guess it's considered a drone boat, right? There's no people on it, and like a barge. They put it out in the ocean. They launch this rocket.
It's a jarge.
That's it.
Jarge.
They launch it, and then they try to land this rocket on the barge in the ocean. And it has led to some spectacular explosions because it's hard. It's complex.
There's this thing called waves.
Well, not only waves, right? But just think about all the different physics that are going on. You got wind, you got thrust, you got the wave. So it's going up and down what it's trying to land on. And you have a basically unstable rocket. And the most recent attempt, which I guess was 2 weeks ago, was the closest to success, but right before it touched, or right as it touched down, it broke one of the legs and fell over and blew up spectacularly. So,
kind of reminds me of castles and swamps.
Yes. Yeah. So this guy, using the Scratch platform over at MIT, took a lunar landing game and adjusted it and made a Falcon 3 lander simulator. So you can virtually try your hand at landing a space rocket tail first on a barge. And I think both of us have tried it, right?
Yeah, I tried it. I went through about 10 or 20, and I didn't land a single one without exploding in the water, upside down, on the barge, near the barge.
I've gotten to the point where, I just try to flip it upside down and launch it straight into the barge.
Yeah, but the barge doesn't blow up.
No, it's amazing.
You don't get that, satisfaction there. But it was pretty cool. If you go off screen, it kind of gives you like a little magnifying glass to let you know where you are off screen.
You're way over there, and you're about to explode.
And you're about to explode. You know, so there are probably ways when you think about it to secure a rocket like that. You know, when you think about how planes had to land on aircraft carriers, you know, there's like these cables that your tail hook would come down on and grab you and kind of, you know, hang on to you there at the end. Maybe there could be some way of like shooting up a contraption that would capture the rocket and then pull it down in a controlled fashion, as opposed
like
to having
a giant comfy pillow.
Like, yeah, exactly.
That just pops something up from like one that. Side, on both sides, and kind of sandwiches it in.
Yeah, I mean, maybe like those plants, you know, in Mario Brothers that come up with just very gently, though, not with sharp, pointy teeth like this. But, you know, come up and grab it and then bring it back down.
Yeah, that's an idea. That's an idea. I think we should, you know, give Elon a call and say, hey, have you thought about a big grabbing plant-like hand thing made out of comfy pillows?
Just a big hand that comes up and grabs it and brings it down. You know, I'm sure there's the, you know, the props from the King Kong movies are probably available.
Oh, yeah, they're probably available.
For a reasonable price.
Yes. Only $9.99.
All right, so now I get it, because this is really more of a social commentary game.
Yes.
A little bit like the TSA game or the copy shop games and things like that, where the point is you can't accomplish your task and let me show you how difficult it is anyway. Isn't that funny?
Well, maybe that's the commentary. But I actually believe that they're going to get it right. I think if you think about all the different sensors that we have and the various analytics that we have in order to try to capture a thing and adjust. You know, I mean, this is the promise of the Internet of Things, right? You're going to take lots of different data sources at one time, do some kind of very fast analytics, and actually do something with that data and not just look at it. And they're trying to do that. That's what they're trying to do with the lander.
Well, that was certainly what was going on the space station too, right?
Yep.
The ability for different capsules built by different organizations to dock required that kind of adjustment too. You just didn't have all the complexities of the platform moving, the spacecraft moving, the waves and the air moving, and having to compensate for all of that stuff.
Oh, but think about it. Did you see the latest Pluto pictures?
I know, but I've heard of them. I mean, aside from the heart ones, of course, very nice. But there's some recent ones that came through that are like super high resolution panoramic kind of shots, right?
Yeah, I sent one out that I saw that was just phenomenal, which is 15 minutes after the flyby, looking back at Pluto with a sunrise or a sunset behind it and the atmosphere and the details and the resolution. So if you think about, here's a thing that they had to do calculations 10 years ago to get that. We should be able to land on a barge. All I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Or maybe, you know, gently put down on like a waterbed kind of thing where, you know, it's soft and squishy and gives room. I don't know.
Yes.
Something.
Yes.
Something.
Yes.
So if we move from the game simulation of rocket landing to the rocket-powered kicks that we saw during the World Cup, very interesting concept.
That was,
wasn't it, though?
That was
wasn't
smooth.
It, though? For Electronic Arts and the news, the unfortunate news, that some of the players on the national teams are actually not going to be in the game. But that's for a good reason.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's a good reason. I think there's two really neat stories here. The first is, this is the first time that EA, in their FIFA 2016 game, is allowing gamers to play the women's national teams, not just the men's national teams. And so it just shows, you know, the popularity of soccer, as we call it here in the U.S., or football, as they call it everywhere else, and the fact that the legitimacy and the popularity of women's soccer. So to me, that's exciting. I've been a big fan and follower of the women's leagues that we've had here in the States. We used to have a local team before it got canceled in the reset of the WUSA. And I've been to some of the Women's World Cup games back in 99 and been following the U.S. team for many years, including some of my other favorite country teams. And so it's really exciting, I thought, just to see that they were enabling that in the game. I thought that was just awesome, right? And then the second half, and this is the part where...
That Engadget was reporting on.
Yes. The U.S. college system, the NCAA, which is the... what is that, National College Athletic Association?
National Collegiate Athletic Association,
yep.
I think.
Something close to that.
Yeah.
Has called foul to EA to say there are 13 female players in the FIFA World Cup roster, right? So this is many different nations, not just U.S., who happen to be students in the U.S. college system playing for their collegiate teams. They do not allow the students to be considered eligible to play as students if they're, I guess, getting remuneration by EA for using their likeness in the game.
Well, but they weren't. I think the article, at least the way that I read it, was the individual women are not getting paid by EA at all. Their likeness was in the game because they were members of the national teams for Spain, Canada, wherever in the world they may have been. And in order to ensure that the EA was complying with NCAA rules around eligibility, amateur eligibility to participate in American collegiate sports, removed them. So they weren't being paid. But I think the point is that by having their image there, they're professionals.
But they are playing for the women's national teams of those countries. Does that mean if you play on the women's national team, you should not be eligible for college?
Used to be that the Olympic sports only could be people that were non-professional as well. I remember basketball
in the US,
and other sports. Yeah,
in the U.S., other countries did not have those same restrictions.
Of NCAA rules, I guess, end with the U.S. boundaries, perhaps.
Yeah, so I actually see this as very unfortunate because, these are world-renowned women soccer players who are playing for their country, who played in the World Cup, and the game is recognizing that. And to have their likenesses removed from the game just because... NCAA believes there might be an issue with them be considered professional players is ludicrous. I think, and this is my personal opinion, it's the NCAA who would like to use their likenesses in their promotional materials and make money off of it.
Well, you know, if you were to extend the thought just a little bit further, Electronic Arts is making a game, FIFA 16, which
is about
football, and they're making money off of it. But what if the likenesses of these players happen to be in some other virtual space, potentially doing playing soccer there or taking part in a game show or doing something else? Does that mean that their virtual avatar, which has their likeness, now has real world implications in terms of athletic eligibility according to those rules?
Well, that's the question here, right? Because if you're
where could it be used? But where could it be used? What if they had a tennis game that happened to have their likeness? What if the individual
if you're a professional tennis player, you would not lose eligibility for playing soccer in college, would you?
I don't know. I do not pretend to understand the mysterious ways of the NCAA or what rules are there. But it's an interesting next sort of thing that would have to be considered because you and I have talked before about how to it's very easy these days to just get a virtual representation of yourself. You know, you can be in front of a computer or camera or whatever and take the necessary 3D pictures and modeling and mapping, and then you can apply that as your avatar in any number of virtual spaces, right?
Yep. Yeah, or you could do like I did recently and just be a camera in front of my home computer and physically be somewhere else with a robot.
Right, right. So under what consideration, you know, if one of these players did that, would they lose their eligibility? What if that robot was on a field pushing a soccer ball around?
This is what, as you say, the mysterious rules are not clear. And I don't think they want to make them clear.
Because, well, there are reasons why you wouldn't. But, well, you know, tell me a little bit more about what it was like to be a disembodied face on a tablet with a pole and wheels rolling yourself around the hallways and going to meetings.
Did I say that?
No, you didn't.
I implied that.
I'm eager to know. I'm eager to know. Tell me more.
So this is actually really cool because, you know, we talk about, you know, virtual reality and extending reality through augmented reality. But what about virtual presence? And so a couple of years ago, there was a company called Double Robotics that started selling, and I saw these guys at Macworld. I saw them at CES. They sell this device. It's basically got the base technology of a Segway. So it writes itself and it moves forward and backwards, right, et cetera, right and left. It has a vertical pole that will adjust itself upwards and downwards. And it has attached to the top of it, I'll call it an iPad. I'm pretty sure it's an iPad, to be honest. And so what this allows you to do is when you need to be somewhere else and you cannot go to that place, to physically interact with the people there and see them as if you were physically in the room. And so I was working on a project where I needed to go through a set of, gosh, how many was it? It was like 35 different demos that were being projected through a display unit in a... in a location in New York. And what it allowed me to do was to go into the room as if I were standing there, and the display unit was maybe 100 feet wide and about 10 feet tall, and various things would show up at different places, etc. And I could, you know, go into the room, scan left and right, see how everything fit together, how the demonstrations worked together, ask the person who was in the room if they would do things for me. I mean, I probably could have used a remote control on the laptop and physically do that myself too, to control the wall, as they call it. But it was actually really, really cool. The only downside is, since it wasn't my actual eyes, light sensors on cameras tend to... have problems with areas of bright light and dark, you know, that contrast area. So you would get some of that lens flare look every once in a while. But it was actually really good because I was able to interact with the people in the room. They could see my expression and, you know, I could say, you know, point over there and literally turn the robot kind of in the direction I wanted them to look at and say, you know, can we move that thing over here and kind of turn my head. I was able to, you know, look at it from different perspectives up and down, not as a physical single camera position that you might do in a teleconferencing mode. It was actually really, really cool. It was lots of fun.
How did people in the room react to you? Like when you rolled in, was there any uncanny valley kind of stuff going on, or was it like, oh, Michael's here?
Yeah, it was Michael's here, because it was a small group of us that were kind of working together on this project, and so they knew I could not come up to New York for that week. It was really a one-hour meeting that we needed to have, but I needed to be in the room, and this was the most effective way to do it.
Awesome.
It was actually really cool.
from the website from Double, when I look at it, it looks like it really is framing your head. Was that really what was in scope, or were you pointing at things, and was it a little bit, you know, further removed from you so you
well,
you
I could
saw your
see
hands
what
as well
it
as your face?
I could it's like FaceTime, so I could see what of me it showed. So I could, mm-hmm. you know, lean back from my laptop or my iPad.
Say, what about this over there, and point to over there.
Yeah. But my goal was really to, you know, turn the face of the robot to where I was looking at, or actually move over to that thing.
Mm-hmm. Did the camera allow you to zoom in on the thing you wanted to focus on too, or?
I'm trying to remember if I did. I think there was a little bit of a zoom capability. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember. There was the ability to move up and down, right?
Right. So if you were seated, you know, yeah. You could have the screen at a sitting kind of level versus a standing level.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, my voice came from that, not from a speakerphone, right? So people would look to me when they were talking to me.
How did that work? You know, because sometimes when you're on a duplex phone in the room there, it's kind of difficult to break in to the middle of a conversation. Was that easy or tough or about the same?
I'd say it's about the same. I mean, I probably could have done something like move my head up and down, right? And by head, I mean
I'm jumping up and down.
The arm of the pole of the robot. Like, hey, over here, excuse me.
I'm going up to the ceiling now.
but it's funny. The higher up you are, quote, standing,
yeah,
the slower it moves.
Oh,
think of center of gravity.
Yeah.
So as that pole comes down, you could really start trucking across the room. So, and
that's neat.
I mean, it was actually really cool.
It has a place where it goes to recharge as well. Yes. Was there like some button on the interface where you just click that and it would go back home to recharge?
I didn't have to worry about that. It was fully charged when I started using it.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
And as you can see, it's supposed to last about 8 hours on a single charge.
Yeah, no, this is really quite neat, you know, just the way to interact and to have that ability to be somewhere else and have people interact with you too in something approaching a normal kind of fashion.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and looking at the pricing, yeah, it's about $2,500 for one of these things.
Yeah, that can be a little steep. So it's a good example for how you can have a real presence while virtually being somewhere, or virtual presence while really being somewhere else. And you and I both were taking a look at an article by Eric Johnson on Recode that was published a little over a month or so ago about welcome to the metaverse and kind of giving a few interesting ideas for us to noodle on here, such as the next generation of Second Life and how the integration with virtual reality solutions, whether we're talking about Oculus Rift or we're talking about the Microsoft type solutions and others, are now beginning to come together yet again. So we've had this conversation a couple of different times. So the first thing that struck me, though, is the concept image that's right at the top of the article looks really engaging and immersive and reminded me a little bit of a confluence of Sony at Home and a little of the augmented reality kind of stuff where certain pieces of information are kind of floating around where you can get to them easily. What struck you when you saw that image, Michael?
There was a anime movie that had this look and feel to it. Because you see a little bit of, you know, the futuristic world in there. You see a little bit of the thoughts or premises behind steampunk in there. It's just a collection of different worlds munged together. I think the most incredible thing is the fact that this may be a concept picture of what this new metaverse might look like. But when I look at the graphics capabilities, even on something like a mobile phone nowadays, right? I mean, and the engines and the GPUs that they have in them, the amount of rendering that's going on in here is something that is not that far-fetched, right? I mean, yeah, the shadows might be taxing to the environment. I immediately looked at it from that technical view of how easily would this be to do, right?
The water and the reflections and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
But I remember really getting entranced with the water capabilities of the Lord of the Rings Online when it first came out 5 years ago, right? Or maybe 6 years ago now. maybe 7 years ago now. Wow. And
long time ago.
Yeah. And going, wow, that's just incredible. And now I look at other games and the water the water capabilities and the rendering that's going on and the reflections and the particle,
physics
yeah. and not just the physics, but the particle emitters. If you look at this image, you see a haze in the background. Right, so that's either a lot of particles or just a de-resolution of the images further away, which is a pretty standard way of doing it, and you load and render them as you get closer. But you see lens flare effects in certain areas. You see all the water fountains that are particle emitters. So you're probably talking, for each one of those little streams going up, 1,000, 2,000 particles or more. So you're now at 20,000 particles, maybe 100,000 particles just in the water. And then you do shadows and you add that to it and you start thinking, wow, that's a heck of a lot of compute power. And then you look at your phone and you're like, yeah, I got it covered. I mean, you just look at what's going on in games on your phone nowadays. It's just amazing. And then you think about the upcoming tablets that are coming out there, like the iPad Pro, where the resolution is better than my Retina MacBook Pro. I mean, it's just crazy. And the GPUs on that. NVIDIA at CES 2 years ago was showing a chip that they're looking for the automotive industry with 192 cores in it. I mean, just the technology and how it's getting smaller, faster, more powerful. That's immediately what I saw when I saw that picture.
Nope, I get it. I understand that makes a lot of sense. And I'm seeing those things now as you're kind of calling my attention to them as well.
It's weird. Instead of going, wow, what a pretty picture, I start dissecting the technology that can make that picture reality.
Well, and this is very necessary when you think about it, because so much of that level of compute power is needed for handling things like cars that can drive themselves and getting the new levels of information out of the environment around us into a readable fashion that we can take advantage and use it too. So very much so. So when I kind of scan through the article again today, the places that I was not surprised at all was really trying to draw the linkages for Oculus and for the Sony solutions, Microsoft solutions are all kind of coming together, not just for game purposes, but for being able to do real tasks in a real world kind of environment while linking it to a virtual world as well. So to me, these pieces are coming together in a way that we were expecting them to. We just thought it was going to be a whole heck of a lot faster.
Yeah, it's funny. We thought it was going to be a whole lot faster, but we also thought it was kind of also way out there, right? I mean, the adoption of this type of technology comes at you in different ways. Many of the things that we, from an enterprise perspective, looked at back then was how do you make meetings more engaging and more interactive, as an example. And now there are so many different technologies out there that are doing multi-stream video sharing in a way that's very effective, very low latency, very high resolution, and given some of the benefits that we were looking at of virtual meetings, right? At the same time, you have the huge ramp up of the VR world that's going on with Oculus Rift being purchased by Facebook. You've got Samsung's what do they call it? Oh gosh, I'm going blank on their offering. You've got Microsoft's offering. You got all these different ways that companies are coming at the VR space. And then on top of that, you've got the extension of all the augmented reality stuff. A matter of fact, I was just hearing a story this morning on Project Aurea. Anyway, the new group starting up inside of Alphabet to go to the next generation of what used to be called Google Glass.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I did not hear that this morning, but I've heard a little bit more about that recently. Yeah. So, yes.
Mm-hmm. What's really exciting is we're in this time with technology where there are lots of different ways that people are trying to address the challenges and the opportunity around better engagement when people are distributed. I wrote a white paper some years ago called Virtual Co-location for development teams, which was looking at the concept of increasing the interaction between development teams using, you know, virtual world technology as a way of providing agile development teams that were distributed to be basically as if they were all in the same place. And, you know, there's lots of ways that people are trying to solve this problem, whether that's augmented reality, whether it's virtual reality, whether it's, you know, always on multi-stream video chats, whether it's tools like Slack, et cetera. And it's really cool to actually see this kind of go and try to figure its way out of what's going to be the one for enterprise, what's going to be the one for the consumer, what's going to be the one in medical or whatever. Cool stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I love some of the things that are embedded in here, too, are things that I personally believe are going to be happening more and more. Like, I want to watch a movie, and I'd like to watch it with a friend who doesn't happen to be in the same town as me at the same time. And we can react together, and we can enjoy it together, and we can interact as it's going on and have some fun with it. Or to be able to be in a conference type situation, which we had plenty of experience doing that in 2008 and 2009 of bringing lots of people together and giving a talk and seeing how people behave when they are virtually in the moment, right? Yep. So that they are immersed in what they're doing and they're there and not trying to multitask three other things at the same time, because the immersive nature of the world really signals that that's the most important thing going on for them right at that time.
Absolutely. So, cool stuff.
Good stuff. All right. Well, look, we are just about at time for today. So I think we need to zero in on what are we playing? What's going on? What are you looking at? And I saw you earlier today on your iPad playing a game, and I was like, what's that game?
Well, it's interesting because it kind of tries to solve the same problem, right? It's a new RPG game on the iPad, and it's called Star Wars Uprising. And the basic premise of the game is it's between Episode 6 and Episode 7. The Emperor has been killed, and you are on a planet that is still blockaded by Empire forces, and you don't realize that the war is over. So so you're trying to you get some information that the Emperor's been killed. You're trying to stand up and throw off the Empire, basically. But it allows for, you know, a typical role-playing adventure game with little side missions, but also to play with other people in real time on a global basis. That whole virtual presence together in the game to achieve certain mission objectives. And so I'm playing that right now. I'm enjoying it. It is one of those evil freemium games, but so far I've not played it far enough and not engaged enough with to where there's even a thought that I might need to do any of the payment.
So this is kind of funny because as you're describing this, it was reminding me of a movie that's on my list of things to see, but I haven't seen it yet. And it's called Goodbye Lenin. And it's set in East Berlin, where a woman I think was either in a coma or there was something, and she missed the reunification between East and West Berlin. So she thought that the German Democratic Republic was still in existence, and all of the hilarity that ensues when her family around her tries to shape things so that she can still live in her comfortable bubble. Even though all kinds of real big changes happened in the meantime. So I know that's not exactly the same thing as what you described, but it reminded me of that movie anyway. Unfortunately
what
for me,
are you playing?
Yeah, unfortunately for me, I don't really have anything new that I've gotten myself engaged in. So maybe I will take a look at the Star Wars Uprising game. I've kind of kept myself busy getting upgraded onto iOS 9 and kind of figuring out all the cool new features and how that's worked of
and
late.
Speaking of iOS 9, I have a recommendation for you.
Ooh.
So we talk about freemium games and how they're destroying the gaming industry. Well,
yes.
Not really. The gaming industry is making money hand over foot with it. Well, there's been this update in iOS 9 to enable third-party ad blockers or content blockers, as they're called.
That's right.
In your browsing experience. And there's a lot of stuff going on with people saying, is this good? Is it bad? Is it, you know, if you disable people from putting ads on their website, will they be able to afford to maintaining their website? You know, it's almost like doing a podcast for free and maybe running an ad on your website. Do you really have enough traffic to even make it worth your while? But there's one that I found yesterday, called Peace. It's rated number one on the App Store right now. It's the number one selling thing on the App Store right now. Which enables you to leverage Ghostery and its web tracking database to block content that might be tracking you. I think you should go check it out. It's kind of cool.
Awesome. So that way I can block various ads, et cetera, directly from within my device.
Yes. Sir.
That sounds really neat. Worth checking out so we can see how it works.
Very cool.
All right. Well, with that, let me thank our listening audience for sticking with us again for another episode. And we invite you to share with us your thoughts, your ideas, your feedback up on the iTunes store and elsewhere. So that we can tailor what we're chatting about to you.
Yes. Thanks, everybody. And hope everybody has a great weekend, but you might not listen to this on the weekend.
Yeah, you might be having a great week. So we can wish you that, too, because that, I guess, works just about any time.
Absolutely. See ya.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network. And we'd like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.